Destruction are the constant companions of soldiers, that is true, Jiap admitted. But they are not our purpose. They are not our goal. We fight because the politicians have failed to keep the peace. We do not fight for the love of killing, for the delight of destruction.
Admirable, said the young volunteer. I am almost convinced that you truly believe that.
Jiap's hands clenched into fists. For a burning moment, he was ready, anxious, to give this young fanatic the death he was seeking. But the moment passed, and he flipped his laptop open. I must speak with the Secretary General, he muttered, yanking the comm wire out of his helmet before he could hear the volunteer's sneering reply. United Nations Headquarters. It had been a hot, humid, hazy summer day in New York City, the kind of day when in earlier times, before the urban core, children would have turned fire hydrants into neighborhood sprinklers. Now an early evening thunderstorm was booming across Manhattan, sending people scurrying indoors, slowing traffic on the streets and throughways, washing the city better than its maintenance workers ever did. In his climate-controlled office, George Faure was not bothered by the weather. Indeed, he had not even glanced out the dramatic ceiling-high windows since the peacekeeper assault force had started its trek across Alphonse's Ringwall Mountains. The assault had not started well, and Faure had been spitting with helpless rage as the peacekeeper colonel reported being stalled in the pass across the mountains. But events had progressed better as the hours wore on. The frustrating thing was that Faure had to watch the progress of the battle on global news television, narrated by that turncoat slut Edie Elgin. But then her broadcast had been abruptly cut off, and Faure celebrated with a little dance across his office carpeting from his desk to the built-in bar, where he poured himself a stiff Pernod and water. Now, slumped in his desk chair, he realized that his celebration had been premature. Colonel Jiap was on his wall screen, reporting in morose detail the defeat of his attack on Moonbase. In the tunnels, my troops were blind and cut off from all radio communications. They ceased to be a cohesive military unit and were reduced to helpless individuals. Faure stared at the faceless image of the spacesuited colonel, his chin sinking to his collar. He could hear his pulse thundering in his ears. Burning fury seethed inside him like lava bubbling up from the depths of hell. But he kept his silence. Mustache twitching, face glowering red, eyes narrowed to slits, he stared at the wall screen until Colonel Jiap finished his report. "And what are your options?" Faure asked once he realized the colonel was waiting for him to say something. For 3 long seconds the Secretary General stared at the image of the peacekeeper officer. At last Jiap replied, "I can send in the second and third waves, but I believe the results would be the same. Once in Moonbase's tunnels, my troops are at the mercy of the rebels."
"And you did not foresee this?" Faure snapped.
Again the interminable wait. Then, "I did not foresee that the enemy would be able to blind my troops. I had considered the possibility that they might jam our suit radios, but the blinding was a surprise."
"So, what do you recommend, mon colonel?"
The gold-tinted visor of Jiap's spacesuit might as well have been a blank piece of modernistic sculpture, Faure thought. He would get no brilliance from this man, no military genius. Jiap said, "I recommend that we cut the electrical lines from their solar cell arrays into the base itself. That will cut off their electrical power and force them to surrender."
"No."
Faure was surprised to hear his own response. He realized that he had made his decision before he consciously recognized it. Yamagata wants Moonbase intact, so he can take it over and use it for his own purposes. I want Moonbase destroyed, Faure finally understood. Utterly destroyed. Its inhabitants killed. I want it leveled the way the Romans razed Carthage. And then salt strewn across the ruins to assure that nothing will grow there again. Moonbase has defied me, and for that they must be punished. Why should I allow Yamagata to have it as a gift? He will continue to use nanotechnology and show all the world that I am merely his puppet.
But that is not the case. No, not at all. Georges-Henri Fauret is no one's puppet. I am Secretary General of the United Nations, and Moon Base must bow to my will or be destroyed. And Yamagata must understand that I do not serve him. He serves me. Giap was asking, "You don't want me to cut off their electrical power?"
"No,"
Fauret repeated, realizing that it was all playing into his hands. Everything was going to be exactly as he wanted it. "Use the volunteers." It was all falling perfectly into place after all, Fauret thought. "Instead of accepting Moonbase's surrender, I will annihilate them. The nanotechnology treaty will be enforced. Yamagata will not be allowed to make a mockery of it, or of me."
"Sir, I want to be certain that I have understood you correctly," Giap said. "Are you ordering me to use the volunteers?"
"Yes, mon colonel, that is an order."
The delay from Giap seemed to take longer than 3 seconds this time.
"They will destroy Moonbase," he said, his voice hushed. "There will be many casualties."
"So be it,"
Fauret replied. "Better to destroy Moonbase than to allow Yamagata or anyone else to make a farce of my power," he told himself.
"Their hour's almost up," Anson pointed out.
Doug had been pacing around the control center, getting some circulation back in his legs, working out the stiffness of his back and shoulders. The center had been in a state of suspended animation since Doug's discussion with Colonel Giap. "Is it over? Have we won? Or will there be another attack? Something new? Something we haven't thought of? Something we're not prepared to meet?"
"Why haven't they tried to cut the lines from the solar farms?" Doug asked himself. "Is it because they thought their nuke would do that job for them? We're still vulnerable. Still hanging by a thread." Unbidden, a line from a literature class came to him. "The Ides of March are come," Caesar says to the soothsayer as he goes into the Senate, deriding the old man's warning.
"Aye, Caesar," says the soothsayer, "but not gone."
"We've stopped them," Doug told himself. "But for how long?" They were all watching him, Ginny, Falcone, even Gordette, standing alone off by the wall. Every technician and specialist in the control center had his eyes on Doug. "I wonder where Edith is," he asked himself. "Did she go to our quarters for a nap?" "Bet not." Edith was napping, but not in the quarters she shared with Doug. She had tottered back to the university studio, dog-tired now that the adrenaline of being on the air had drained out of her, but intent on getting a camera and recording the doings in the control center. She looked in on the editing booth, still hot and sweaty from her hours in it, feeling slightly nettled that she didn't know for certain how many hours she'd spent broadcasting to Global News and through Global to the world. She started for one of the hand-sized cameras resting in its rack, but Zimmerman's big plush couch looked too inviting to resist. "Just a few minutes snooze," she told herself. Stretching out on it, she was asleep within seconds.
"You heard the Secretary General's orders," said the volunteer. "We will bring you victory." Giap turned to the leader of the self-styled Sacred Seven, sitting beside him on the tractor's bench.
"Not victory," he snarled. "Annihilation."
The young Japanese must have smiled behind his helmet visor.
"As the Secretary General said, so be it."
The colonel had no reply. Yet he was thinking, "I could still cut their electrical power lines. How long could they hold out then? A few hours at most. They would have to surrender to me. That would be better than allowing these insane suicide bombers to kill everyone."
"I suggest," the volunteer said, "that you re-establish negotiations with the Moonbase commander, while your troopers help us to break into the plasma vent tunnels as per our plan."
Giap noticed a slight but definite stress on the word "our." Precisely 1 hour after his conversation with the peacekeeper commander ended, Doug sat at his console again and reopened the communications link.
"Have you spoken with your superiors, Colonel?" he asked.
"Yes. They are reluctant to admit that we have reached a stalemate here," came the colonel's voice. Doug wished he could see the man's face.
He sensed the tone